This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake. Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer rear tine tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hi there, I'm K-Town. And on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
I first actually learned about him in 1979, I went into a bookstore in Los Angeles called the Bodhi Tree, which is kind of an alternative, paranormal, UFO, New Age bookstore, all the above. And I saw this coffee table size book, photo book, sitting on one of the shelves. And it immediately, it's like, zing, my attention was drawn right to it. I went over, picked it up and started leafing through. And I knew right away, just knowing by looking, wow, this is real. They were the clearest, most remarkable photographs, not of lights in the sky, which is what we typically get from, so-called UFOs, from objects, clear objects. You could see, kind of the machining on them and everything. And there were texts in there about the investigation that was ongoing in Switzerland about this and tests that had been made in different areas about the metals and this and that, such as you mentioned. And I just thought, oh, this is amazing. Well, I got the book and I took it home. And the problem was that there wasn't any more information forthcoming for a long time. It would take me another 7 years until 1986, actually, until I would, by chance, be in a little cafe in Sedona, Arizona. And with my daughter and a friend of mine, and there was one other guy in the place. We were waiting for our, little health food sandwiches. And we invited this guy to come over and sit down with us and talk. And one thing led to another. And Sedona, for those people who may not know, is kind of the New Age Mecca in, the United States. Everything kind of woo-woo is out there, for better or for worse. And we got to speaking about UFOs, and Billy Meyer's name came up. And this fellow that I was speaking with said, well, have you read the contact report? I said, well, what's that? He said, well, in the photo book that we were talking about here, there's some quotes in there from these extraterrestrials. I said, yeah. And he said, well, that's from 1,800 pages of conversations that Billy Meyer has had with these people over the past few years. Because at that time, it was 1986, and as I would learn when I accepted this guy's invitation to get all this material from him in Los Angeles, the transcript from the first 3 years from 1978 until, no, pardon me, 75 to 78, which were called the official contact. The first 3 years worth would comprise 1,800 or so pages, and they would have the most amazing information in them. And that's what this fellow did give me when I returned to L.A. He'd invited me to come up to where he lived in an area called Decker Canyon, and Indeed, there were these mimeograph paper. Most of the younger audience has never heard that term, but it was the forerunner of Xerox and you know, all that instant printing stuff. Most fascinating several months of reading I had ever done. It was a little difficult, partly because the translations had been done by somebody who spoke German better than English, so the sentence construction reflected that with verbs at the ends of sentences and what have you. But I spent, as I said, several months just going over 1,800 pages of information. Some of what made it fascinating, strangely enough, was how there would be several pages of the most mundane and boring stuff that these people would be talking to Billy about in terms of his getting his work underway and the people that he would need to, you know, be working with, and then when they would show up to meet him at his property. All these different details that would be normally boring and mundane made the whole thing even more authentic, because here he was taking, you know, time to have these conversations about this, you know, daily structure of this work that would unfold over the next, you know, 40 years. So the other stuff in there was mind-boggling. And one of the things that really got me was I had been fascinated, of course, by all the clear UFO photos, you know, in the picture book. And there would ultimately, we would find that there were 1,200 of these photos and films and video and metal samples and sound recordings and incredible stuff. But what struck me, what really turned my head around, was that in, I think it was 1988, I opened a local newspaper living in L.A., and there was a so-called New Discovery. And that New Discovery was that Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory had made a connection and a profound discovery that the ozone damage was connected to atomic bomb testing. And they listed various percentages, et cetera, in there. And I immediately, as I'm reading this, I'm going, how come I already know this? I know this information, and it's a new discovery, can't see. So in that kind of little moment when you're going, what? You know, how'd that happen? Suddenly, the little light bulb went off. I reached under the bed and grabbed the first 100 pages, which were bound, you know, in a little, you know, paper-bound block, they call them, 100-page blocks. And there, as I leafed through, only took me about a minute, and I found the first mention of this, and there was another mention in those 100 pages, and there would be more later, where Meyer was told specifically about this, and the comment, this is going back to 1975, and I read it in 86, you know, we're jumping around, but here it is. And they said, well, you know, as you knew in the 1950s, well, it turns out that Meyer had already, at 14 years of age in 1951, he'd written about the damage to the ozone and all this other environmental damage we have. He's the first person on record to describe climate change. And we have now over 200 specific corroborations of what I call prophetically accurate scientific information, that higher standard of proof you mentioned. And it covers a wide variety of sciences, world events, all sorts of stuff. Today I put out another blog. I've been putting up blogs. I have maybe 3 new blogs in the past 5 days about scientific and geopolitical information that Meyer verifiably published before we did.
Let me ask you this.
Sure,
Michael.
Please.
Tell me, why did they choose Billy, or did he say why they actually chose him to contact?
The problem here is that, here's what I like to say. There are things in this case that I can prove. That means that I have satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt, based on information that's available to any and everybody, that this is authentic and that each of these specific things can now be verified, especially since everybody's got the internet. There are things that I call speculative, meaning they either relate to the far distant past, about which we have no record, or the as yet unarrived future. Now, to specifically answer your question, and I like to use this kind of little disclaimer in these situations, according to the information in the case. And here it is. According to the information in the case, the human spirit is a fact, and that we will eventually scientifically prove it. It's different from what we call the soul. The soul is not what we think it is. It's really a temporary construct. In each lifetime, each personality is formed anew, the soul being located primarily around the solar plexus, the personality, the emotions, and all this stuff having its center there. The spirit is literally a hologram, a tiny part piece of this creation, this universe, with the potential to remerge eventually with the entire creation through countless lifetimes of evolution. Now, it's said that the spirit that currently enlivens Billy Edward Albert Meyer is beyond ancient. It is the oldest incarnated spirit form in our universe, in a human being, and that this human being's history, as his previous personalities, go back multi-millennia, far beyond even its earliest appearances here on Earth. Again, now, the caveat, nothing to believe, I'm just giving the information. According to this information, the most recent arrival on Earth of a personality that bore this spirit, or spirit form as they call it, was a prophet named Henoch, H-E-N-O-K. There have been a couple of Henochs in this lineage. Now, we know from this information that the Pleiaran extraterrestrials, the ones we're, you know, connecting here with Billy Meyer, have tutored six prophets, or teachers, if you will, before Meyer, and their names are as follows: Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, that's the name that they say was the real and true name of the teacher, prophet, human being, who was falsely named Jesus Christ, a man for whom there is actually zero historical record. We could always get into that. The sixth prophet in this lineage would be Muhammad, who also was a group prophet, and who, like the five prophets before him, had the teaching that he brought corrupted and falsified and manipulated so that Islam, a representation really of the truth, then is Christianity or is Judaism, although all religions carry certain elements that are true. But they are, again, according to this information, all wrapped in utter disinformation. Muhammad never married 9-year-old girls. He wasn't trying to kill infidels everywhere. What happened was he was a liberator of women, and his task was to try to stem the potential worldwide enslaving that Christianity would succeed with through the Catholic Church. So he's a disruptor to that. And then, naturally, what he brought got falsified, turned into another religion, and there we go again. So it's said in this information, the seventh and final prophet slash teacher of this kind of material for Earth would be someone who would come in the electronic age when the teaching could be presented worldwide to the multitudes, the majority of whom could read and could write, and it could be preserved unaltered as a teaching, a non-religious, belief-free teaching for people to study, test, and determine the validity of themselves without any side authorities, any gods, saviors, saints, spirits, with anything looming over them, supposedly determining their paths and judging them and what have you. According to this information, we are solely 100% responsible for our own lives. And that the way the universe is set up is actually not based in fear and purgatories and hells and, you know, being dipped in lead for the eternity if you don't believe something and all of this frankly, primitive superstitious stuff, which was first, you know, made into corrupted form thousands of years ago. And by people who were primitive, who'd never seen a bicycle or a flashlight, a kitchen mat. And yet, because they took down information always long after any original events occurred, they corrupted it. And they tailored it to suit those who would benefit and profit by creating cults and religions to control human beings. Therefore, my take on it is that as the time approached for the seventh and final prophet, the various parties that might be involved in this whole thing said, well, gee, what are we going to do now? You know, we've had, you know, prophets have been stoned and nailed up and all the rest of this. How do we avoid all that so we get the message out finally, because this is the last shot? And somebody raises their hand and they say, I know. By the time they discover this guy, he's going to be a gray-bearded, pot-bellied, one-armed Swiss farmer, and nobody's going to start a religion about him or anything. And in fact, they'll attack him all the time, but the teaching will get through. And that's pretty much what has happened.
Wow. Michael, I want to go back a bit, and I want to ask you about the prophet that you said is Jesus. Can you tell me what he said, if anything, about our Creator?
Sure. And this, of course, let me fill it out a little bit and say that young Edward Albert Meyer was raised in a religious community, religious parents, when he was first contacted at the age of 5.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
5 years old, and his confidant initially wasn't in his family. It was a parish priest who had also been telepathically contacted by the Pleiaren. And who, while he was a religious leader for his little community, he also had a very expanded consciousness, and he knew there was more to life than even what he was able to convey to people through the form of religion. So Meyer, when he starts to have his contacts, especially with third contact person, Semyaze, a woman from the Pleiaren civilization, he's asking, well, what about God? Do you guys have God in your, you know, planets and, you know, in your civilization? And they said, we don't use that word because we know what it means. And he said, well, now explain that. And they said, okay. Now, again, this is according to the information in the case.
Okay.
And nobody needs to believe it. If you want to think about it, folks, fine. If you don't, it's also fine. But here's the thing. According to the information in the case, human extraterrestrials have come and gone, sometimes, or stayed, on this Earth over more than 22 million year period. Some came, of course, you're talking primeval world, they look around, they stay for a while, they leave. Some stay, they get stranded when their technology fails, they survive as long as they can, and they either die out, or they regress to a much more tribal state where the survival, of course, you know, against all sorts of creatures and conditions is the prime motivator, and they forget their true history, and as they're breeding and, you know, they're bringing forward progeny, and they don't know anything any longer after a few generations about where they came from. Here they are, you know, avoiding being killed by all sorts of, you know, prehistoric beasts and what have you. Some come later, hundreds or tens of thousands. Some, the remnants of these people are still here. And I'll talk a little more about it, but let's go a little more to this in this way. These beings that came were always, of course, infinitely more technologically developed than any of the primitive Earth human beings that were around and that were even conscious enough to have anything to do with. And now we're just going back mere thousands of years. So, some of these beings that were also so technologically advanced had high levels of intelligence, of course, and even spiritual development, but some of them abused it. They abused it by lording over the primitive humans, representing themselves as the creator of all that exists. Why, in a mere 7 days, I put it all together. Now, the problems with this, of course, are many, even in terms of science, when we start going back too far in the, you know, we keep discovering older examples of human life that, you know, very vastly predate biblical records and all of this business going on. So Meyer, as he's being explained, and we even have on my website, we've got documents where they explain the names of some of these people, some of the ones who were progenitors of different races. There was a progenitor for the red race. There was a progenitor for the black race, a couple of progenitors for white. That means that there were space traveling red and black and brown and white and many other colors. Space travelers hundreds of thousands to millions of years ago. So people who are bigoted are going to have a rough time when they encounter some Meyer material because, you know, many people these days are relatively knuckle draggers, you know, compared to far more evolved beings that were here long ago. The most recent arrivals, in terms of the final colonization of the people, were the Asian people 26,000 years ago, even though about 2.4 million years ago, some of what we call and refer to as the Asian races came here, refugees from another star system. This, when you get into Meyer, it's like Star Wars on steroids. You know, you're reading stuff that is mind-boggling. Now, to get back to this question, so Meyer's saying, well, if God really refers to advanced human beings, what's the deal here? To be a little, you know, anthropomorphic, metamorphic. They said, look, we speak about what we call the creation. We live within this universe, this creation. And this creation, apart from a physical structure that is far vaster than your scientists have even the faintest idea, and far older as well, this creation is a consciousness in itself. And it is the creator and sustainer of everything within it. The unique part piece of itself is given to the human life forms, which are spread vastly throughout the universe. And that part piece is known as the human spirit. And that is the part that is developed evolutionarily through the countless reincarnations of the spirit, each new personality starting afresh, not burdened by the imaginary karma, let's say, of Hinduism or anything else. You come into this life with a fresh slate, although you also do have access, usually unconsciously, to certain things that were accomplished and learned as a, you know, in the form of your previous personality. But the creation is neutral to all of its creation. In other words, in the magnificent perfection of the creation and the life that it birthed and the order that it created down to the most infinitesimal, as yet not even discovered pieces and elements invisible to us, it created perfect laws and perfect order so that there is never the need for it to intercede, to punish, but the reward. The laws of creation create the reward in and of themselves as people learn what these laws are. And then, if they freely choose to live their lives in harmony with these laws, with the advice and recommendations contained within this brilliant, impossible to define, all magnificent creation, then their lives tend to move and motivate towards the good. All lives have struggles and challenges, and all lives need some negativity. We can't just have endless positivity, which of course isn't our problem today, but we always need that kind of irritant, the grain of sand in the oyster shell, that which we have to learn about to overcome and to evolve up the next step and the next. So we will always be faced with these things, but through the exercise of free will, we're free to make our mistakes and make our right actions and learn from our mistakes and correct them. We're never punished by this universal consciousness. It doesn't take sides in football or wars. It doesn't want or desire anybody to kill in its name. It's never, that's not part of the laws of creation. These are always man-made miseries born out of lack of truth and knowledge, born out of ignorance of the way things go. Now, that in itself isn't something that we just have to come down and condemn. It's part of our evolution to learn how to course correct through trial and error. But to base our existence in 100% self-responsibility, self-honesty, to see things as they are, and to make our determinations and judgments to the best of our ability, first by seeing, pardon me, reality as it is, and to focus and, if you will, filter forward our intentions and actions through and upon a base of love, peace, freedom, harmony, knowledge, wisdom, logic, compassion, mm-hmm. justice, and all those other lovely things which aren't just, you know, flimsy words. So we have so degraded these ideas that we're bored by them often in our world of fast fixes and adrenalized, you know, excitement. So it's not that there is a deity, according to this information. We are living within, we are enlivened by this creation. It is within us and all things. Everything is interconnected. There is nothing throughout the universe that is not interconnected as a creation of creation.
Michael, so, I want to, yes. I hate to interrupt you, but I don't want to get people lost, and I really want them to get the, I really want them to understand why this information is so important and why people have reacted the way that they have to this story and to Billy's contacts and things like that. So many people have came out of the woodworks to try and disprove his information. And myself, like many others, I really hate the word debunk. I hate it because to me, and I've heard that in connection with Billy. As a matter of fact, to me, it gives the impression that he's lying, and I hate that. But in your opinion, why is this happening?
Inevitable, because we have millennia of conditioning here. We see our world through the filters of politics and religion and entertainment and superficiality. As a side note, and I will come back onto that track, it's said in this material that if the library at Alexandria had not been burned, if the Catholic Church hadn't, you know, ascended to such great power, 200 years ago, our world would already have been comprised of space-traveling human beings. We wouldn't be stuck here with this primitive warlike mentality. Okay, so when you bring something forward like this, people react out of all sorts of motives, most of it based in fear, because it is threatening to their paradigms. It goes against everything that they've been taught or made to believe, meaning there's no evidence for what we're pounding into your poor head, child, but you better believe it or you'll be punished by me or somebody. Okay, so there are the people that are the skeptics and debunkers who are skeptics as well. If things don't fit in their paradigm, they attack because they also are, you know, fearful and based in very limited, you know, belief forms that they try to cloak in science. Now, two of the prominent skeptics have since retracted their claims that Meyer hoaxed his stuff. Models and miniatures, they kind of backed out of that. But there are skeptics. As a matter of fact, there's one website that is 83 pages attacking the Meyer case and me in particular. And I frequently post stuff on there for people if they want to, but they can't. They are helplessly consumed by their own truly vicious and venomous consciousness. People who have degenerated in their own thought processes so badly that after almost 80 pages, I posted something on one of these sites. There's about at least 400 pages I know of attacking me, and hundreds more, you know, in the case. So I posted a question, and I said, okay, all of this, you know, venom that you guys do forward, here's a question for you. I'll even give you a little prize for the best answer. Why are you so angry at a man you don't know, you've never met, who's asked nothing of you, who's tried to get nothing from you, who hasn't begged money from you, asked you to join anything, and has only brought forward his best evidence and his truth, supported by scientific? Why are you so angry at this man? Not one of these people even tried to answer. They just continued to launch their rather infantile and insidious attacks. It's sad, because these are human beings who were children once, who were growing up, and somehow, somewhere, they got twisted into thinking that in the face of that which is certainly thing, and, you know, it's not a slam dunk anywhere, you got to work your way through it, that the best thing to do was to try to character assassinate the man, his evidence, anybody associated with it, and to be unrelenting in their viciousness about it. Now, they're free to do that. But the law of cause and effect is a universal law that governs every thought, feeling, and action. Every single one. There's nothing in life that is not part of the cause and the effect that is made manifest. So these people spew forth, despite all offers of trying to reason and ask, they're unrelenting. So they will then, in its own timing, this pendulum of cause comes back on them like a wrecking ball, as it does in larger form, comes back such as to our country for the policies of the past, you know, 100 years that we've exploited other people. And now it's coming back as a wrecking ball all over the place, because of our politics, our, you know, military policies, our secret policies. So it's not, there's nothing to be done to the skeptics. I've taken on the top professional international skeptics and defeated them in arguments. They trust, a couple of people tried to prove that Billy Meyer's specific scientific information pertaining to Jupiter and its moons was backdated, meaning that he published it after the fact. But they ended up corroborating that he published it before it was discovered. So, you know, the people who try to kill the truth only pollute their own consciousness. There's nothing wrong with being skeptical. Nothing at all. We have to be discerning, because there's so much nonsense in the world. But when you can't reason, and every response coming from the consciousness is to be vicious and to attack and try to degrade, then you know that that personality in this lifetime, unless something in their own consciousness intercedes on their behalf, because it won't come from the outside, then they basically doom themselves to a rather bitter life that will just become more and more unpleasant, because it's loveless.
Right.
We don't attack like we have love.
Michael, let's talk more about Billy's education and the fact that, you know, they took him back in time to educate him and to meet some very interesting people that were very important to world history. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, my goodness. It said, again, according to information in the case, and this is something can't prove at this point, although some evidence did come forward a few years ago about a book that was discovered that validated something about one of Meyer's time travel trips to the past.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
14th century France, and then in the documentation, it's claimed that he went back to Jerusalem around 32 AD, just prior to the events of the crucifixion of the man that they refer to as Emmanuel, and that there's a lot of information about what happened as well to this man. Yes, he was crucified. No, he didn't die from the crucifixion, and that's a whole controversial thing. But interestingly enough, there's some independent research that was done by a German man some years ago that corresponds with what the Pleyaran people told Meyer and what Meyer learned from his own experiences, that this was a man who survived the crucifixion and ended up traveling afterwards with family and some disciples all the way into India, where he ultimately died at the age of 110, and there's a tomb there and all. Now, it has to be said, what's interesting about this, the new translation for what's called the Talmud Emmanuel, the original teaching of Emmanuel, the man that we've been told was named Jesus Christ, this man had 17 female disciples. That fact was ripped right out of the Bible by the guys that put it all together to maintain control and power, and in the process of falsifying much of the rest of it. They were very important to this. Mary Magdalene was a close friend. She was not the wife of Emmanuel, though he did marry when he was about 45, 48, after his mother Mary had died in India as well. The story of Emmanuel and the Talmud and the teaching and how Meyer co-discovered this stuff is fascinating. I mean, it's Meyer has one of the most well-documented lives of anybody that's ever lived. We have photographs of him going back to the age of four, passport photos, photos when he was a teenager through his 20s, and I mean, you name it, and documentation. So there's photographs that exist of him with the co-discoverer of the Talmud Emmanuel in 1964. The original transcripts were destroyed by the Israelis in a bombing raid in Lebanon. I don't want to go too far afield here because I'll lose track of the question. There's so much to speak about. So those were a couple of his time travel trips in the past. There was a particularly important time travel trip into the future. And this produced evidence that was viewed by the original investigative team in 1978. And this is pretty mind-boggling stuff. Meyer was meeting with the investigative team. They had only been into the investigation for a relatively short period of time in 78. The team was comprised of Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, who had been retired from the U.S. Air Force. He was an investigator in the Air Force of UFOs. And then he had two friends, Lee and Britt Elders, and they were high-level investigators, private investigators, and professionals who secured safe rooms, phone lines, computers, etc. after 78. I mean, there wasn't much going on with computers at that time. But they did all this for Fortune 500 companies. They still live here in Arizona. They were skeptics. They thought that Wendell was going to be taken for a big ride and it wouldn't be on a UFO. So they all went to Switzerland together as part of a team that ultimately was developed to examine all this evidence. One day in 1978, Meyer is talking with them in the kitchen and says something about the earthquake in San Francisco. And they say, oh, you mean the 1906 earthquake? He says, no, the one that's coming. And they're looking around and say, what are you talking about? So he leaves the room. He comes back with a little yellow envelope that Kodak Photos used to come in. I don't know if they still do. And he throws it down on the table and out spill 11 photographs. Not drawings, not paintings, not photographs of drawings or paintings. Photographs of San Francisco in the midst of utter destruction. Fire, buildings falling into each other, smoke and confusion, you know, rain, vehicles have run into each other, all this stuff. They're looking at photo after photo. And they know, Meyer said, don't ask me, I'm not allowed to tell you, the date. And he said, look, I knew this event was going to come, and so I asked one of the extraterrestrials, whose name is Quetzal, to take me forward that I could photograph it, forward in time. And he said, well, of course, we can do that. And he took me forward. This year, in 1978, we went forward in time to an unspecified year. And this is what they allowed me to see. And I photographed it. Well, so they're trying to figure out, when would this happen? So Wendell Stevens was a very, you know, keen-eyed fellow, and he noticed the cars on the streets. He said, and we have documents online about this, his words, and I'm paraphrasing here, Katina. He said, the cars don't look like the cars of today of 1978. Most of them are smaller, rounder, kind of a lot of beetle-shaped cars with a lot of much larger glass windshields than we have today, and even glass in the roof, or going into the roof and on the roof, a lot of glass. Can you say moon roof? Okay. And then he said, there's no exterior protuberances, side view mirrors. Well, this has remained a mystery for a few years up until fairly recently, when we now know that Mercedes, Toyota, Tesla, and a bunch of other car companies have already built their prototypes for cars without side view mirrors. We already have cameras inside cars and screens for backing up. And the next logical step, of course, is to take away those silly side view mirrors. And there's a company in Japan now that's already building the interior corner screens for the windshield to replace the side view mirrors. Now, 1978, we're talking almost 40 years ago. And the lieutenant colonel retired from the U.S. Air Force is describing cars that look like today's Prius, some of the new bugs, other cars, you know, the rounder, smaller cars, the glass on the roofs and the moon roofs and all of this, and the next level of development, the lack of the exterior mirrors. And of course, they also said in the photos there were buildings that didn't exist in San Francisco at that time. So this is a head scratcher. Those photos were taken back by the Pléyaren. They were at first going to allow Meyer to publish them, and then for whatever reason, they said, no, it won't help, and they took them back. I disagreed. I thought, please, if anything would help, it would seem that would help. And they thought they must have calculated a lot of people will freak out. They'll be feared. They'll accuse us of destroying the city. Who knows? Whatever they decided, those photos never saw the light of day. But that isn't, for me, you know, crucial for trying to, you know, quote unquote, prove the case. There's plenty of, I've got 3 blogs up this week alone, as I mentioned, that are just, you know, stock full of information. So I don't know if that helped, but, you know, that's some of it.
Let's talk about his traveling. Did he ever visit their planet or any other planet for that matter?
Yes, he did visit their planet. And he spoke to the people there. However he did that, he addressed the populace there. They know about him. Some very interesting, you know, things pertaining to some interactions here and there. But he was taken to and shown other worlds in different levels of development, from very primitive to worlds that were, let's say, developmentally commensurate to ours, and then worlds where they were, you know, beyond us, even worlds where they were warring with atomic weapons and doing stupid things. His actual photos from the space voyages had been basically stolen and manipulated, and all he got back for the most part were photos that had been substituted and were not the ones he actually took. He described certain things. It was fascinating, of course, but we'll never get to see those photos because they were stolen, probably by the CIA, who's been monitoring him for decades. They had a base right above his home there. They had taken over a Swiss military base, which is right up the hill. I've driven past it every time I've been there over my 17 visits. They're no longer in there. They don't need to be based there physically. Their technology with the satellites and stuff is sufficient. You know, they can see anything they want to on Earth and monitor it. And all that stuff. So, and they were probably behind some of the 23 attempts in his life. And so it's a rough thing for a man like that who comes forward with, you know, such a, you know, literally history altering kind of, you know, content for humanity.
It's amazing that he survived all those attempts. Does he have a clue yes. as to who's behind it, really?
Behind the attempts on him?
Yes.
Yo, sure. Well, some of the people, he actually met one of the women who tried to kill him, and then she was remorseful, and she came to meet him, and he forgave her for it and tried to explain things. And so there's a number of people who were very religious who were fearful that there was some devil or something involved. He was some kind of a demon. But the ones that were more serious about him were people from various, you know, apparently like connected to intelligence services, because they view this information as the most potentially destabilizing. They certainly did at the time. Nowadays, you know, pardon me, it's like, if I'm not as worried about it destabilizing the world, because I think people have been so dumbed down, they no longer, to large degrees, especially the young people, a lot of them, unfortunately, the hope of tomorrow, you know, these people have been dumbed down to, they can't tell what's real from what isn't. And a lot of other people can't. You can, you know, they think everything's a video game, and the, you know, virtual this and tweeting that and twerking, texting. Well, now there's exceptions. I know, you know, I've met young people who are exceptions to that, but the mind, you know, blowing brainwashing being done to people, the most susceptible generations are kids that don't even know about life before the internet. They probably think that they're not born, they're downloaded from the internet. Or, you know, maybe popped out of a CD drive when those were still around. They have no concept of real life beyond certain elements of the current time.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.